we get constant requests for people to add Bitcoin at checkout, and I think it'll be great for our store owners, right, to get an additional conversion boost. I had the fortunate experience of getting canceled. I was one of the first people to get canceled in 2016. I don't particularly, you know, have a lot of respect for Jack Dorsey. Twitter really pushed a really inaccurate perspective on life. When they say, like, Trump's wrong, like, these are the types of errors he'll make where he'll be 99.9% right, and then, like, they'll find, like, the one exception to what he said, and they'll be like, oh, he lied about this, so.
What advice would you give to anybody out there thinking about starting a business today?
You know, number one principle is...
This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Anthony, thank you for joining us, sir.
Happy to be here.
Well, I'm a happy customer. Like I was saying, it's we got put in touch by somebody who's been on the show and thought that I should have you on after the saga that you've been on since July of this year, vocalizing your support of Donald Trump after somebody tried to take his life in the beginning of July. But I was happy that this individual put us in touch. Saying this individual because I'm not sure if he wants to sure. Be public that he introduced us, but I'm sticking real customer. We had we had a boxing tape that we used to send out TFTC merch, and I think before we dive into what the last couple of months have been like for you individually, mm-hmm. I'm really fascinated to learn what it's been like building Sticker Mule, a highly successful private business over the last 14 years. You guys are everywhere.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a different background. I say like I'm old fashioned because, you know, first of all, I'm privately owned, which I guess is an old fashioned way of doing things. Like not too many people do it that way anymore. But, you know, the other thing, my co-founder is in his 80s now, and he was in his 70s when we started. And, you know, we had a crazy story where he actually got through his whole career without ever using a computer. And then just before Christmas 2010, he got his first computer. He was asking me for help on it. And I just started BSing about starting an internet company, and he said to me, what the hell do people even do on the internet? And so you know, I showed him a few websites. One was called Cafe Press, another one's called Zazzle. Both of them are still alive today. And he said good night, and I thought nothing was going to come of it, but he came and saw me the next day at 9 a.m. with a notepad in his hand, and he said, we got to start an internet company. And we launched 3 months later, and it's been a wild ride ever since. We got like 14 or I don't know, we got 15 or 20 orders the first day, and yeah, it just took off right away, and it's been crazy ever since. And now we're 1,200 people in 39 countries, and it's been a fun time.
How did you decide on Sticker Mule, that particular product, that particular internet company?
Yeah, so like I got from my co-founder, but I guess like one of my principles, we run the company on principles. I guess I run my life on principles, but like one of my number one principles is move quickly. And so I just said internet company. He had a manufacturing background. I like, you know, I grew up in a manufacturing town, and I had a bit of a manufacturing background myself. So we wanted to do some sort of manufactured product, but believe it or not, you know, the internet was, yeah, it was different back then. Like we hired a firm that was building an open source version of Shopify. I don't know how technically oriented your, you know, audience is, but like, we were building an open source version of Shopify, and believe it or not, they had their phone number on their website. So I called them and said, you know, we want your help to build an internet company. And they said, what do you want to sell? We said, we have no idea. And he said, what's your budget? Yeah. He said, what's your budget? And I had a 70 some year old co-founder who interjected, and you can tell he's older on the phone. And he said something along the lines of, we've never done anything on the internet before. We were hoping you could advise us as to what cost expectations would be, you know, so you can tell right away it's an older person because, you know, it's an older way of speaking. And so he said, geez, I got to be honest, like, you know, the internet tech world's hot right now. And a lot of, you know, weirdos are calling us, and you guys sound like a bunch of weirdos. I don't think I want to work with you. And before he could hang up the call, my co-founder looked at me, and, you know, he gave me a nod. And I said, well, we could spend $100,000 And the guy said, you know, I'm free next week. Why don't you come down to D.C. and meet with me? So we went and met with him. And he said, I got to be honest, I really like you guys. I still think you're weirdos, but I really like you guys. And, you know, I want to get started right away. Could you please go home and decide what the hell you want to sell? So we went back and we batted a few things around. I wanted to do, you know, so I like, you know, humor, and I thought animal names were funny. So we just, you know, we started matching products and animals, and sticker mill sounded good. So we went with that. And yeah, we went with that. And I give the guy a lot of credit to this day. He, we gave him a $100,000 number as a budget, and he built the whole thing for $50,000. So he ended up getting acquired by First Data for, I think, a sizable amount of money. So hopefully he's doing good still too. But yeah, I give him a lot of credit. You know, not that many people would hear $100,000 and only take 50. Most people would hear $100,000 and take 200 or 300.
Right. I mean, it's 2010 is like an incredible time to launch an internet business. You had the really emergence of popular social media, Twitter, Facebook, really getting their legs under them. Obviously, Instagram will come later. And so, what was it like scaling the business at that time? And
yeah, so I tell this story. People are like, how did you fund it and how did you grow it? We never accepted VC, you know, we never accepted venture money. In fact, my co-founder exited. So, my co-founders exited. I ended up being the sole owner. And people ask, how do we do it? And I don't like, I haven't particularly liked Jack Dorsey. I ended up not really liking Twitter, you know, because it really morphed into something that was pretty nasty. Like, people appropriately called it a weapon. And until, like, Elon stepped in, I guess, you know, it really was a weapon to that was used to attack people, particularly people that didn't agree with the way people in San Francisco think. But anyways, I got to give a lot of credit to Twitter, because we were about, I don't know, it was our first year in business, and somebody that was running a startup went on Twitter and said, I'm looking for a vendor. And we wrote them, and they wrote back. I think the tweet was sticker mill wins our business, fastest response and best website. And so we ended up getting a company called GetGlue, and they were trying to compete with Nielsen's, and they were giving away stickers to fund to get people to use the app. So, like, you would check in to admit you were watching shows, and you would win a sticker for that show. And they ended up spending, like, all, you know, about $1 million a year in stickers with us. So they, you know, so anyways, they funded all of our, you know, right off the bat, we got this. In fact, the other account we got, which was crazy, before we even launched, the guy that built our website for $50,000 put me in touch with the Tom from GitHub, and we ended up acquiring GitHub as an account. So yeah, right off the bat, we got, you know, two major accounts, GitHub and this one called GetGlue, who I think they spent all their VC money with us. So yeah, I owe Twitter and Jack Dorsey a debt of gratitude, even though I don't particularly, you know, have a lot of respect for Jack Dorsey.
Jack is a personal friend. I think if you two sat down and talked, you'd get to understand him a bit better. But no, I think that's like the whole timing of this, that you launched, and then you had like the VC funded startups, like merch is like a big part of if you get, I'm in a Bitcoin co-working space right now. If you go outside, I bet there's more than 1,000 stickers that were most likely bought from Sticker Mule, just hanging around of different companies trying to show their wear. I have a bag here. Yeah,
I know.
I have a bag of stickers here, most likely from Sticker Mule as well. Like Sticker Mule, excuse me. But you know, like digging into this too, like what was it like getting these partnerships within these like distribution avenues, building that out? You said you're in 39 countries, 1,200 employees.
What was countries. What I mean is, people think like what I mean is we got employees in 39 countries. So it's kind of funny related to the Trump thing. Like we started the company. I'm from a small town in upstate New York called Amsterdam, New York, and there's not a lot of talent here. You know, technical talent particularly. So our first developer was from England, and then I just, you know, I was like, before the word remote, like people call it like remote first or whatever, like whatever, before this was a thing, I just started hiring people. And, you know, we quickly got up to like people from 6 or 7 countries. And then it just sort of became fun to just be like, well, you know, we would joke. We're like, we already got somebody in Ireland. We can't hire another person there. So we just kept, you know, hiring talent from all different countries. And, you know, we're up to employees in 39 countries now. But yeah, distribution is worldwide. So we ship worldwide, and we do manufacturing actually in Italy. So we got manufacturing in upstate New York, South Carolina, and in Italy. And I think other than really Elon, I think, you know, I'm probably the only, which also makes me a little bit different. I see the world a little differently. Is, you know, probably the only manufacturing guy in tech. There's not too many manufacturing oriented tech CEOs. So we got a team of 100 engineers that build the, you know, technical infrastructure for us. And then we got, a sizable manufacturing operation.
Yeah. It's manufacturing is something that desperately needs to be brought back to this country. I mean, that's something we talk a lot about on this podcast, being Bitcoin focused. That is, like we have it right outside of the studio here, fix the money, fix the world. And if you like dig into the hollowing out of the manufacturing base in this country, it's really because we need to flood the global markets with dollars. And to do that, we need to go to China and say, hey, why don't you make stuff for us? We'll give you dollars to drive demand for dollars. Meanwhile, kicking out all the manufacturers in the Rust Belt and has led us to a very precarious situation. So it's great to see that you're principled and building in America, which is
so, believe it or not, it's actually like advantageous to do manufacturing in America. It's not that hard. You know, I don't know why more people don't do it, but I think, like I said, most of the technical talent is going towards the software world. You know, there's not many people like that are technically oriented thinking about manufacturing situations. But if you throw technical talent at manufacturing, believe it or not, people don't like, I just recently started sharing this, but we got technical people working, you know, software people working to automate our backend systems. We also have a sizable hardware engineering team. And when you get to a significant scale in manufacturing, you kind of have to go out and buy your own or build your own equipment. Like, this isn't something many people do. I mean, the only other person sort of doing this, to my knowledge, is, I'm sure Elon's building a lot of his own equipment for what he does. I think he had probably had to build all of his own equipment to do something totally new. But in manufacturing in general, most people are buying equipment off the shelf and trying to make it work. But if people put more technical brain power behind manufacturing, we could easily bring it back to the United States. You just need to invest in automation so that you can do it here. But even though we invested heavily in automation, we still got, you know, almost 1,000 manufacturing employees in the United States.
Yeah, that's massive. And
just a quick example, just quickly, like, we brought a product called we call them transfer stickers, and under like vinyl, people call them vinyl lettering, transfer stickers, and that product was completely made overseas, and it was done by hand with tweezers, and it's crazy. We got a fully robotic system that does it, and you know, you need people to operate the machines, but yeah, it's much better to have, you know, robots run by humans or managed by humans than people with tweezers. And it's better for everybody, because you can only pay a person with tweezers so much money to make a product, right? If it takes like an hour to pull apart a sticker with tweezers, you know, you can only pay the person so much money. Whereas if you're operating a robot, or, you know, one person can operate four robots, you know, they can make a significant, you know, significant income. So yeah, you know, I think a lot more manufacturing could come to America, but people got to put their technical brain power behind it, and not just, not just behind software, all tech goes after software, because it's very easy to scale software businesses. You know, it's just servers, but manufacturing businesses are totally different. Like I think people like Elon and Trump and myself are somewhat aligned ideologically, because you know, we're on factory floors dealing with people. We understand we understand things that most of the tech world doesn't really understand.
Yeah, we've gotten away from the world of atoms, physical things, to the world of bits.
Yeah, I see myself like that. You know, there's a thing going, like most technical people are poisoned with, you know, whatever you want to call it. They're very with a particular worldview, and a lot of it comes from just not enough interaction, I suspect. You know, because I don't know. It's just like when you're on a factory floor and you're talking to people all day, you see a totally different, you know, world than if you're, you know, I mean, especially with the remote work. It's great remote work, but you know, some people get very isolated with remote work and like socialization, and in fact, like, you know, I don't want to, whatever, if he's your friend, I don't want to get in too much trouble with the guy. But no, I mean, I saw it with people, like with my own staff, like during the pandemic, you know, where people were sitting in front of their computers all day reading Twitter, and their brains were getting, you know, poisoned. Unfortunately, we lost a few people during the pandemic, because they're whatever.
Yeah, no, they're, it was
Twitter was really poisoning minds during the pandemic. I don't know. I would like to talk to Jack, and I think Jack should, you know, come forward and explain to the people like what he was thinking during that whole period, because I saw people sitting behind computers during the pandemic and reading all sorts of horrible tweets, and it like they really started believing the world is totally different than it was. Whereas, you know, I was still in a manufacturing environment. I was still socializing with people, but particularly for people that didn't socialize and just were on Twitter all day, Twitter really pushed an inaccurate perspective on life.
Yeah, it was It was bad. I mean, that was like, we got demonetized on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, not just Twitter. Yeah, Twitter, YouTube, all these guys, right? Yeah. You
know? No, it wasn't saying like the disinformation, misinformation, which are Marxist terms in my belief. I don't think there's any such thing.
Accurate worldview is an inaccurate lens into reality. Like, because it's weird. Like, because I would see people that would just be on their computers all day, like using, you know, just reading this stuff, and then you would like leave that world. And I live in Mexico. And so I live in Mexico. I spent part of the pandemic in Mexico. I spent part of the pandemic in Dominican Republic as well. And like, you'd go to places where it was like, people are still totally normal. But then you'd be dealing with other people. It was like a totally different worldview completely. Depending upon, you know, in the beginning, even myself, like I got sucked into the, you know, stay home in front of your computer. And I spent like, a good portion of the pandemic in a town called Cuernavaca, and I didn't leave my Airbnb. And then one day I left the Airbnb to go hiking in the mountains, and I was shot. I got there, like the mountains were so full of hikers. I was like, you know, am I going to die of COVID out here? But there was I couldn't believe there was like a whole world of people that like were still living totally normal lives. And you know, but then there was another world of people that were like cooped up in their houses reading Twitter all day and thinking totally different things.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC. Set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and they're rolling out a bunch of other products, including an inheritance protocol and sound advisory. So go to unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com. Similarly, like 2020 November, we were in the New York area at the time. We escaped to South Jersey. I'm originally from Philadelphia, so we escaped Brooklyn to South Jersey in like a less populated town. And down there it was like mask mandates and people were getting crazy at the quarantining. And we went to St. John down in the Virgin Islands for the month of November. We're supposed to go for 2 weeks, and we were 2 weeks in, and everybody was acting normal. We're like, we're not leaving. So we stayed for a month, and it was insane, particularly coming back from St. John to the United, or to the mainland, United States is a U.S. Virgin Island. It was like, holy shit. Like, we were just there for a month. People are going to the beach, drinking, no mask mandates. And then you come back and everybody's like 6 feet, can't go to Christmas dinner with anybody. It was insane.
It's an unpopular opinion. I shouldn't even say it, because like people misconstrue what I'm saying, but I almost like missed the pandemic because it was just such an interesting time to be alive, particularly if you were traveling and like, yeah, being in situations where you're like, one day you can do nothing, you know, in this place you can do nothing. And in this place, you know, like I said, like I was in, I had myself sheltered in this Airbnb in Cuernavaca, and I left and I went to go hiking in the mountains, and I was in this like mountain town in Mexico, and everybody was out and about like it was nothing. Or when I was in Dominican Republic, particularly, like it was crazy. The closer you got to the hotels where all the Americans were going, it was very locked down because they wanted to do a show for people. And as far as we got away from the hotels, it was like not locked down at all. And then I stayed in Punta Cana. So like, yeah, as you got far away from the hotels, it was not locked down at all, or it was like a lot more relaxed. And then like, if you went to a city that wasn't touristy and you just like Punta Cana is a touristy town, it was just, there was nothing. Like, there was like nothing. And then, you know, I'm from New York. Then I would come to New York, and New York was like the apocalypse had hit. It was like, you know, the world had totally come to an end. And I don't know. Then I would go to Florida. My mom was living in Florida. I visited my mom, and, you know, I was yelling at her to lock down, but then I'd go visit her in Florida. And you know, I was like, the nightclubs were raging. I was like, what the heck is it? Weird. It was just an interesting, life experience to go through it. And I got to admit, I reconnected with a childhood friend during that time. I hadn't talked to him in 12 years because he went through a tough time in life and he kind of disappeared. And he showed up in my life just before he moved in with me too. And I had 3 months just playing video games. I was like, this is great. I was like cooking food and reconnecting with a childhood friend. I hadn't played video games in like 8 years. So I was like, so it was just, it was an interesting, I don't know. There were so many interesting things happened during that period, but yeah, not a good time. We don't want to go back through. We don't want to go through that ever again. So hopefully I don't get in trouble for saying what I said.
No, you're not going to get in trouble, but it does highlight that we had this like 2-3 year period and some people are still stuck in it, this mass psychosis. And I think it applies to why we're talking today, which is, I mean, similarly with like Trump derangement syndrome, we've gotten to a point, particularly here in the United States, where the divisiveness and the vitriol has gotten to such a point where it's insane, to the point where you had an attempt on the life of a former president and a front runner for president heading into this election. And I think I had a very similar reaction to you. You know, personally, have voted for Trump, won't vote for him again. And it was like, people, what are we doing here? It's getting to the point where, you know, they're trying to kill this man in high def 4K live TV. And a lot of the mass psychosis, which I think is behind Trump derangement syndrome, which has been aided and abetted by whether it's social media platforms or mainstream media outlets sort of putting out these false narratives that really got the country to a point of fervor where he had an attempt on his life and some people were celebrating that and actively saying, oh, I can't believe the guy didn't have a better shot. And then you running a successful company and Sticker Mule sticking your neck out there, sending an email to your customers and a tweet out to the broader world saying, let's look at what we're doing here. Let's take a step back and try to quell this political violence and bullying that's out there, because it's obviously driving us to a bad place. Like, why did you feel compelled to stand up and speak out?
I mean, obviously there's a problem. I tell people, like, I got like my one principle is move fast. My other principle is like solve the biggest problems you can solve. And like, there's been a problem there for a long time, but you know, unfortunately people like myself have kept quiet. So, I just said, look, this, you know, when it gets to a point where a guy's almost like losing his life in order to do what he thinks is right, I think other people should, stand up and do the right thing too. And I, you know, I think a lot of credit goes to other people like Elon and, you know, there's other people beyond me, Snoop Dogg saying great things about Trump and 50 Cent saying good things about Trump. And there's a lot of other people doing the same thing too. But yeah, it's like when it gets to a point where a guy's almost losing his life to do what he thinks is right, I thought it was the right thing to do to speak up. And if you read my message, you know, most of the people that actually read it, in fact, I got friends that don't like Trump at all that called me and they said, you know, I heard about your message and I thought you must have wrote this terrible thing. And then I read it and I said, no, I said, people at Sticker Mill, you know, Sticker Mill, we got people that support Trump, people that got Biden and they like Biden too. And we all get along, we all get together and like this hate needs to stop. And there's a lot of great people that support Trump. Unfortunately, you know, like for whatever reason, it's been acceptable to demonize Trump supporters as, you know, something they're not. And there's all sorts of nasty slurs used to defame them and slander them and slur them and whatever. So, yeah, it's a big problem. I think it's a problem that I could particularly help with because I run a company where it's you know, it talks to both sides. I think anyone that's in a situation where they talk to both sides can probably help with the problem, but it's a big problem. I think it's a problem that I could try to help resolve. And I also think, like I said, when it gets to a situation where somebody's almost giving their life up to do what they think's right, other people should consider doing the same.
Agreed. I mean, it's insane when you make your political affiliation, your whole personality, not only that, like let it dictate who you interact with and how you treat them. It's not the way the world is supposed to work. Like you should be able to be friends with people who have different political persuasions. And like I said earlier, like it's gotten to the point where it's just completely insane. Like it's, and I think if you, like people are afraid to broach the subject, and that's another important area. I think a lot of people, we're emboldened to speak up because of the assassination attempt. Like, hey guys, this is getting fucking insane. But before that, like people are self-censoring because they think if they voice their support of one candidate over the other, it goes both ways. Some people will see Biden or Kamala supporters and say, I don't want to interact with you at all. I don't think that should be the case either. But people are self-censoring because they think, particularly if you're a business owner or somebody that has a lot of skin in the game from a financial perspective, that if you do put your neck out there, it will harm you financially and hurt your business. But you sent a video out on Twitter a few days ago, or X a few days ago, basically saying that it's all hot air. It's all, all bark, no bite in terms of how it affects businesses at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, people, you know, some people are going to take action, but, you know, by and large, it's like, for the amount of, if you saw the attack that hit us, it was crazy. I mean, it was all the internet talked about for a few days, it seemed like. Like, I was joking to you before, it seemed like threads I went on there, and I thought, like, I was like, I must have been, like, watching, like, my own feed, but I was on the general stream, and it was just, like, everyone hating on Sticker Mill for a day, and people were making Instagram reels, bashing us and doing everything, and we got some hit pieces came out. Well, not, actually, we got a lot of positive press, too, for what we did, but, for what happened, yes, a lot of talk, very little action. I think if you're running a similar company, you're curious about what's going to happen. Like the internet backlash is, it's mostly talk, very little action. But yeah.
What was it like for you personally, putting up with that backlash?
I had the fortunate experience of getting canceled. I was one of the first people to get canceled in 2016 before, like, he even became president, like, because I gave him a $500 donation. And so I was a much smaller company at the time, and I didn't even know what cancellation was. Somebody discovered that I had made a $500 donation, and we got inundated with hate mail back then. And, to be honest, like, we were smaller. I was like, you know, it was traumatic then, to be honest, because I didn't see it coming. And so just to wake up one day and all of a sudden you're getting inundated with hate mail, the employees were panicking. I didn't have the same, like, leadership skills I have now and whatnot. And I just didn't have as much experience. So that ended up being a great experience for me because, it gave me a front row seat to what this, like, cancellation stuff's like, going back 8 years. And so it was, scary back then, but nothing ended up happening then. And, very little's happening this time. So it ended up being an interesting experience. I shouldn't say this. Like, I'm sort of enjoying the experience. I'm enjoying the opportunity to try to, like, do good. And I like solving problems. I like doing interesting things. And I think even within the company, like, we've maintained a sense of calm. And I think even, I'm sure some people disagree with me, but I got a good enough rep with people that people are, within the company are all in generally, tolerant, even if they disagree with me. But I think there's a lot of people at Sticker Mill that view this as interesting, just sort of an interesting thing to go through. It's if I could avoid doing it, I wouldn't avoid doing it. It's an interesting experience. It's an interesting life experience, and hopefully it's doing something, doing something good to stop this problem. I think it is, but not just me, but I think you're seeing, even Elton John recently was saying nice things about Trump. You're seeing so many people are coming out and saying nice things about Trump, and I think we're all kind of, like, collectively hopefully fixing the problem. I think we are going to fix the problem, but I think we're all collectively fixing the problem, whether it's me or Elton John or Elon Musk or Snoop Dogg or 50 Cent or Anuel AA from Puerto Rico or any of these people that are, raising their hand and just, like, politely saying it. I think that's the important thing, like, say it politely, but there's a lot of people. It's not just me. And so I think we're all kind of collectively fixing the problem.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled SAIF, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with ZapRite. Go to ZapRite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. ZapRite.com/TFTC. $40 off.
Well, that's a really important point, is like approaching it politely, like bring civility back to the conversation. It's just like, have proper manners. Just hear somebody out. Don't scream at them. Don't jump down their throat. We should all be adults here. Able to have a conversation, see somebody's viewpoint, react to that calm, cool, and collected, and civilly, and have an actual conversation instead of just throwing proverbial shit at each other.
I think one thing people on the other side, particularly the strong anti-Trump haters, don't particularly understand is that most people like me that support Trump, like, we still want to maintain our friendships with people that don't like them. You know, I think they don't know that because by and large, we stay quiet. But, I got a lot of friends that don't like Trump. I know some people that are very strong anti-Trump people in the past. I've been scared to talk to them. I know this is a phenomenon that goes on, but I think to the extent that people like me don't speak up, like we're doing a disservice to people that are, afflicted with Trump hate because they don't realize the people that like them, they don't realize we still want to be their friends. And, we're not looking to sever friendships. I mean, if you look at it really, it's really more the other way. Like a lot of the people that are the strong, really afflicted with anti-Trump hate, want to sever friendships already been. And I don't think it's really their fault. I think they've been indoctrinated into thinking this way where they have to sever friendships or whatnot. But most Trump supporters don't want to lose their friends over this topic. They want to have a conversation and have a country that's unified and maintain their friendships or family relationships or whatever they may be, or business relationships. A lot of people were canceling me and saying, I'm never going to buy from Sticker Mule again. But I happen to be a big fan of a company ran by a guy named Duskin Moskowitz, who is a huge, huge donor to the other side. And, he sees the world completely differently than me, but he built a great company called Asana. We love his company. He did a great job. And I think the reality is people from all walks of life do interesting things in life. And just because, I happen to think that, Trump's the best choice for happiness in this country and really worldwide. And I got a lot of reasons why I think that. And I think other people do too, but just like I built an interesting company, people on the other side build interesting companies too and do interesting things too. But the tragic thing is, I would bet, I don't know. Hopefully Dustin sees the world similar to me and he doesn't want to excommunicate people that, support Trump. But yeah, I think you see a lot of people on the anti-Trump side that they want nothing to do with Trump supporters. And it's really tragic. And they don't understand the extent to which people that do like Trump don't feel the same. They don't want to kick their whatever. They don't want to kick people out of their life just because they see the world differently politically.
Yeah. That's the big problem with the mainstream media, particularly, is they've taken sound bites and quotes out of context and really driven home this vitriolic rhetoric in terms of, if you're a Trump supporter, you're a white supremacist. If you're a Trump supporter, you're a racist. You're anti-woman, you're anti-choice, whatever it may be. And if you actually go and find the primary sources from which they're trying to pull these sound bites and project this framing onto the world, 9 times out of 10, it's completely miscombobulated, discombobulated, misconstrued. And I'm not sure if you saw it, but last night the All In podcast guys, they had their summit that they're doing and they had JD Vance come, and I've never heard JD Vance speak outside of a couple of podcast interviews or Senate hearings that he's been on in the past as his tenure as senator. But they sat down with him for 45 minutes and it was really the first time I was able to hear him speak at length on multiple topics. And the narrative that the media is putting out there is that he's weird. He's this weirdo, this corrupt VC guy. And he was actually very articulate and thoughtful in terms of how he was responding to the questions that they were throwing his way. He took on some hard questions and made a lot of sense to me in terms of what he thinks the world should do in terms of policy if Trump gets reelected and he's the VP. And it's just insane to see what is projected, the framing that's put forth, and the reality if you actually take the time to dig into things and go do the research yourself.
Yeah, I got a good friend of mine, someone I'm really close who's, you know, highly educated, and, you know, he says, and I see the same thing. It's like, by and large, you know, because people like me and maybe yourself and, you know, whatever, we've kept quiet. You know, we seem like, you know, seem like a reasonable guy. I think I seem like a reasonable guy, and we keep quiet. Like, the media's going out and they find like six or seven. And it's maybe not the right thing to say, but they find 6 or 7 people that are, you know, fairly uneducated, and they use them to defame all Trump supporters. So they find people that are, you know, whatever, not the most articulate people, and they use those people to defame all Trump supporters. But the real tragedy is, if you look at the other side, it's not the uneducated people that are leading the charge with the anti-Trump hate. It's really the highly educated people. And if you, you know, if you look at the people that are severely, like I said, hate afflicted or afflicted with anti-Trump hate, these are by and large like highly educated people. So, you know, I got a lot of empathy. I wasn't even like a politically motivated guy. I just got a lot of empathy for the Trump side of the equation. They get bullied by the media, they get bullied by a lot of people, and, you know, by and large, they're getting attacked over, you know, look, if, you know, the people that get that whatever get branded, or they're using as the examples of, like, take the whoever these weirdos are, you know, from I don't know, some of these groups that they find, they find like 6 guys in the woods somewhere, and they use them to defame all Trump supporters as thinking a certain way. But if you really take a look, you know, take a step back and look at who's leading the charge and who are most severely hate afflicted people with the, you know, the anti-Trump hate, it's like, it's highly educated people, people that run tech companies, academics, journalists, people that probably have, you know, at least 1 or 2 degrees, you know, maybe a master's degree or something like that. And they should know better, but for some reason, you know, I think that's, you know, that's a big problem that doesn't seem to be discussed enough, is that, you know, by and large, you got highly educated people picking on people that are, you know, not so educated, which, you know, really is, you know, it's in my opinion, inappropriate and cruel to do. And I don't know, people should take an inward look and say, geez, if I got 1 or 2 or 3 degrees or whatever a lot of these people have, or if I'm bright enough to run a tech company and make all this money, maybe I should you know, also be bright enough to take a step back and question my perspective, and it really makes sense to hate 100 million or so people. You know, I throw out the number that hundreds of millions of people like Trump, and people argue with me because they say, geez, he only got 70 million so votes, or 70, 80 million votes. But like I said, I live in Mexico. I got an accompanying 39 countries, and there's people that like Trump all over the world. I mean, just in South America alone, he might have a few hundred million supporters. He's got a massive fan base in South America. I speak Spanish, and I hang out with a lot of people in Mexico, and a lot of, you know, I got friends, a lot of Mexican friends, a lot of South American friends, and he's really well liked in South America. He's really well liked throughout the entire world. So, you know, hopefully people listening to this, you know, if people that are smart enough to build companies and do other interesting things and accumulate degrees, like, they should also be smart enough to, you know, hear what I got to say and what other people got to say, and help calm the anti-Trump hate and stop all the craziness that's going on, so people can live happier, really, on both sides.
Yeah. And from like the business perspective, do you think the pendulum's swinging back towards sanity? Because obviously we had a streak there, ESG policies, DEI, you know, woke capitalism, the broader term encompassing all that stuff, was a big theme in the mid-2010s. Arguably into the middle of COVID. But it feels like, number one, whether it's ESG or DEI, I think inarguably at this point have proven to be detrimental to successful businesses. If you're trying to just do things because you want to project that you're environmentally friendly, socially just, you have good governance structures, or you have diversity, equity, and inclusion in your business, that actually doesn't result in returns for investors or a viable business at the end of the day, because you're not hiring on meritocracy and you're allocating capital in a way that turns out to be not efficient and leads to lower returns for your company and the funds that are investing in you. But now it feels like the pendulum could be swinging backwards. Like, hey, I'm running a business here. And like your message, I think, was a perfect embodiment of this pendulum swinging back. It's like, people on both sides of the aisle that work for our business and that buy our products and use our products, and we're just going to, we're providing a good and a service to the market, and that's what we're here to do. I don't care what you do with politics, keep that out of business. Do you think that's a trend that'll continue to get stronger?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, beyond it, like, not being ineffective, it's also like very disrespectful. You know, this stuff, the DEI stuff, is very disrespectful to, you know, people that come from multicultural backgrounds and deserve the jobs they're in, you know, because it makes people question why they got it. But, you know, I don't even like talking about this topic in particular, because I just find it was a very disrespectful movement. There's a lot of talented people that come from, you know, different backgrounds that that genuinely are great at what they do. And this whole movement that you got to put people there and you got to force things that shouldn't be forced is very disrespectful to the people that, come from interesting cultural backgrounds and deserve the jobs. And to be honest, I don't even like talking about the topic. Like I could say it, but I almost wonder if I got to ask permission for my team, but you know, if people saw the team, I'm not going to even say exactly, but if people saw the management team that surrounds me at Sticker Mule, they would be shocked at the people I got in management at Sticker Mule. But I don't even like talking about stuff like that because I think it's disrespectful to them to say, geez, I got people from this background or that background that work for me and are in management. It just is very disrespectful to people because, you know, people that work for me all got it because they earned it and they're good at what they do. And there's lots of people that got the jobs and they earned it because they're good at what they do. And yeah, to force it, it really, you know, it diminishes everyone when they do that. So not only is it bad for investors, that's been proven. It was a silly movement with the, whatever you want to call it, I guess, you know, the virtue signaling word or whatever, but it was a silly movement, but I think people should take a step back and look at it and say, like, it's not just bad for businesses. What you're doing is very disrespectful because there are talented people, you know, there are talented people that got it because they deserve it and they don't deserve to be belittled and diminished with like DEI movements.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's paradoxically inherently racist to it runs with a lot of assumptions that prove not to be true at the end of the day, as you're proving at Sticker Mule, which is again the driving to the insanity of where we are at in terms of the broader conversation happening not only at the political level but at the social level. It's like we need just get back to doing things like treat everybody as an individual, hire based on merit, and provide goods and services that are needed at the market. And then if your business do it profitably, like this is the way we should view all these things. Like there's demand in the market for a good or service. If you can provide it, you produce it at a low cost and sell it with some margin. Everybody makes out at the end of the day.
I will say this. I think people like working in diverse companies in general. So it's like, you know, I mean, we got diversity at Sticker Mule, but it's because it makes sense, not because it's forced. And I think people should do that. Like they should realize that, you know, people like working with people from different backgrounds. Nobody wants to go and work in a company where it's all dudes in charge. Nobody wants to be in that situation. Like nobody wants, you know, people like diversity. Most people do at least. So you got to do it, but you got to make sense. If you do it and you announce we got a DEI director, what you're doing really is insulting people.
Yeah. So what do you think is the big trend that you guys are looking to attack at Sticker Mule? Maybe back to like the business side of things. What are you seeing out there?
I mean, I like solving big problems. So I think like the anti-Trump hate's a big problem. I'm working on that in my personal life and, you know, some like, I guess, whatever time I would be spending on work. But like the big problem we're solving at Sticker Mule is, you know, we grew to 1,200 people selling products that people buy. We just launched the stores platform. So anything you buy from us, you can now sell through us. And I think there's nothing, you know, there's no bigger problem. Like one of the biggest problems in the world is really how to help people earn a living. There's, you know, it's one of the most important things you can do for people. So all my focus at work, I just had a call this morning with people pushing on it. And our whole focus at Sticker Mule this year and, you know, into the future is building our stores platform and helping people make money. It's still in beta. We already got, without even talking about it, we barely told people, but we already got 9,000 people signed up, including we got Don Jr. on the platform now. One of my favorites is a guy named Ricky Berwick, who's an incredible comedian out of Canada, a very inspirational guy too. If you don't know who he is, he's very funny, but he's, you know, he's a big inspiration to people too. That you can really do anything in life if you try hard. And he's a really hardworking guy and very funny. And so, yeah, that's our big platform. Help, you know, that's my big push right now is, you know, solve the problem of like, in the you know, the new internet economy, like how can other people easily spin up businesses and make money? And if you check us out, you can get a store launched in seconds. Already 9,000 people are on our platform selling. We got 20 or 30 developers working on it full time, and yeah, we're going full steam ahead to make it the best way to sell stuff and make money and monetize on the internet. I think it's going to grow faster than any other e-commerce platform, but beyond that, we're going to be, you know, the best way really for influencers to monetize what they're doing, probably better than YouTube or, you know, once we get things going the way we want, we'll be better than anything else out there in terms of helping people monetize.
Hell yeah. What are some of the biggest headwinds that you see? I mean, obviously COVID created a lot of supply chain disruptions. Like, does that affect you guys at all? Like, what are, like, economically inflation's been high?
Well, like when COVID hit, you know, we got shut down completely because I'm in New York and we only had one facility in New York. Now we got two facilities in the United States, one in New York and one in South Carolina. I didn't ever see that happening, that they would shut us down completely, whereas like other states stayed open. So, you know, we're by far the biggest in our space, but like, you know, our competitors got to stay open. We got shut down. I never saw that happening, but we, you know, we got redundancy now. You know, other headwinds, like, yeah, the inflation thing's a problem. Like, people only want to pay so much for stickers and t-shirts, and we like to keep the prices as low as possible. But, you know, we also want to invest in innovation and R&D and stuff like that. So, yeah, the inflationary pressure that, like, eats up stuff, you know, hurts in that regard. Aside from that, you know, we got to see what happens with the election. I'm not really a big, you know, I don't know. I don't really think I don't really worry too much about headwinds per se, because, you know, aside from COVID, where it was like we got shut down, other people got to stay open. I thought that was really unfair. But, you know, as long as we're all in the same boat and we're all like playing by the same rules, I really don't care. I'll operate and succeed in whatever situation we have, you know, like, so whatever is happening in the economy, whether it's, you know, my co-founder actually, you know, earlier in his career ran a company in Brazil where they had inflation out of control. And it's like, as long as everybody's playing by the same rules, you know, we'll be fine. We'll succeed. The COVID situation where New York shut down and, you know, other states are open, and that was a really unfair, you know, unfair situation. But yeah, we'll survive in no matter what the headwinds are, you know, unless they come in and start censoring what stickers I can print, and I get in a battle over free speech over stickers or something like that, and shut down completely. But you know, hopefully it doesn't go that far.
Yeah. And I have to ask, since this is a Bitcoin podcast, have you been following the trend of companies, both large and small, using Bitcoin as a treasury asset?
No, I'm not. And, you know, I don't know anything about that, except we get constant requests for people to add Bitcoin at checkout. And I was telling you, no, we're looking strongly at using Bitcoin at checkout. I think it'll be great for our store owners, right, to get an additional conversion boost. And so, you know, I don't have any Bitcoin. I don't hold any Bitcoin, but we get constant requests for people to pay with Bitcoin on Sticker Mill. We're strongly considering that. Some of our guys are huge enthusiasts of Bitcoin, but I personally, I'm always slow on everything. I didn't even know how to use social media until recently. I didn't want a Twitter account. I didn't, you know, I stayed off social media. In fact, I grew most of the business through email marketing, and I don't know. Yeah, I just started using my personal Twitter. I don't have an Instagram. And so, yeah, Bitcoin is probably something I'll learn about in 5 years or so. I don't know. I'll be waiting. In fact, when Facebook came out, I was in college and people were like, you got to get on Facebook. And I was like, nah, it's okay. I'd never touched Facebook either. I was like, why would people do this? They can just call each other. I don't even like to text message. I like making phone calls. So
a rare breed these days.
And I'm slow to, I know, maybe because, like I said, my co-founder's in his 80s and my dad had me late in life. If he was around today, he'd be over 100. So, yeah, I'm like from another era completely, even though, you know, I'm not that old, but I guess, you know, I'm sort of from that era, I guess. And maybe that's another reason why I like President Trump is, I don't know, I'm from a different era that, you know, most people my age aren't particularly familiar with. You know, most people weren't raised by, you know, don't have a father that'd be over 100 years old if you were around still, and don't have a co-founder that's in his 80s. So yeah, I'm from a generation that doesn't exist anymore, I guess.
Yeah. That's fascinating, because I mean, I don't know how old you are exactly, but I'm like 33. Like, I grew up, I was in high school when Facebook came out, and yeah, I haven't had Facebook in years, but I definitely did get on when it first came out when I was younger. And it is insane to think of how much that drives a lot of people's lives these days, particularly interaction with social media, whether it's X, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, whatever it may be, and to find the rare breed that is barely using X.
It's funny.
It's refreshing.
Yeah, it's really, my whole frustration with like Twitter like came about. I didn't even want to use Twitter. Like, we went through all the years, like, except in the beginning, I did acquire that account, but then we had like 10 or 20,000 followers. I thought Twitter was, you know, I was just like, we don't need that. We're fine. You know, growth is good. Who cares? And I hired this kid out of high school and he was like, we got to do more on Twitter. We got to do more on Twitter. And so I said to him, well, I don't want to use it unless we have a million followers. We had like 20 or 30,000. This is actually a funny story too. I was like, well, I don't want to, I'm like, it's not worth that. I don't think, unless you have a million followers, because I was like, the only people that anyone cared about on Twitter years ago was like Elon Musk, Kanye West, Jack Dorsey. I was like, there's six people that benefit from this. And the rest of us are just like pissing in the wind. for lack of a better way to say it. And so I said, you know, I want 1 million followers. And so he was like, well, I don't know how to do that. And so I took over the account and I started growing it. And I was growing like 30 or 40,000 followers a month. And we were getting like insane engagement. And that's when we were getting like 500,000 to 1 million impressions per tweet. This was like just before the pandemic, leading into the pandemic. It was blowing up, going crazy. And yeah, me and this kid were growing the account. And I just got so fed up with like, it was just so like, that's when I started seeing all the negativity on there and I got really frustrated. And I just closed the account down for quite a while. And just stopped using it completely and killed all our engagement. But I didn't realize, you know, now like 500,000 to 1 million impressions per post. Now they're not called tweets anymore, but it was like one of the top performing accounts on the platform, I guess. But yeah, I got so frustrated. But yeah, I was also very late to the party and using Twitter. I didn't want to touch it at all. And so we're back on there now having fun, but we're trying to be, you know, I guess we're doing some, you know, some of this stuff that I'm doing related to like talking about Trump and trying to like calm things down there. And then we're also like looping in a lot of comedy. We're working with Ricky and Ricky and doing comedy there. And we're going to maybe hopefully work with some other people that like having fun and like being funny too. I got a little bit of a comedy background. So, you know, I like making people laugh. Although, yeah, depending upon the day of the week, like I'm either serious or funny. Depends on what's going on. Usually I'm in a really goofy mood, but I don't know. I feel like you got me in a serious mood today. Maybe because I just got it off an
airplane. Yeah, the airplane de-stress will do that. But that's the other thing, like on the business side, everybody's like, you need a social strategy. Like the fact that you've scaled the way you have, yeah. So be email marketing is predominantly email and SEO or?
Yeah, we were email, SEO, and Google Ads. That was all it is. For, you know, and doing a great job for customers. I mean, making people happy. Like one of the biggest drivers for us, which was just making people happy and then people talk about us. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the one thing you can't reproduce is, you know, your ability to make people happy. And yeah, we were really good at that.
What are the internal principles and the structure of your business there?
So, you know, well, I ran every department, you know, I started the company. So I feel like I did all the customer service for the first 2 or 3 years. Then we hired one customer service guy and it was like just me and him for a few more years. And now we have, I think, 100 people in customer service or so. I don't pay attention to the exact numbers, but around 100 people in customer service or something like that. But, you know, what I did is I handed off different parts. I ran manufacturing and that was my favorite. That was the hardest thing for me to give up because I really like manufacturing. But as I handed off to different departments, I would like write like a set of 10 principles I would use to run every department. So we got overall principles. One of the biggest ones moves fast, but then I got principles for every, you know, every department. One of the biggest ones in manufacturing, I think that people don't get is, you know, is something along the lines of, judge people primarily on the basis of attendance, and that it's like, so it's our job to it's management's job, the engineering team's job to make the job so easy that like all the workers need to do is show up. And it's, you know, we don't want bosses running around like criticizing people and saying your productivity is low, your productivity is high. We don't look at individual productivity. We just look at attendance. If you show up and you're pleasant, you're fine. I think that's a really important principle in manufacturing in general that like if more manufacturers adopted, they'd be good because yeah, I don't like making workers responsible for productivity. I make management responsible for productivity. Like productivity is resolved via, you know, engineering improvements, whether software or hardware based, but productivity is resolved via engineering, not via, you know, it's an old, really old way of thinking. It's not even old, you know, the smartest manufacturers never thought this way, but it's really, primitive way of thinking to think that you run manufacturing by putting the burden of productivity on the workers. I guess Amazon does this a little bit.
Just going to say it's like a stark juxtaposition to Amazon, which is
yeah,
like I don't have quasi slave labor.
No, we don't do that. It just as long as you show up, and if productivity is like low for a particular apartment, we look at how we can innovate through engineering to make productivity rise. And we don't look at individual productivity and say this girl's fast, this girl's slow, this guy's fast, this guy's slow. We don't look at that.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
You know, if you show up and then your pay is based on the job you're doing and how many years you've been here, we don't do performance pay.
Yeah, I imagine that makes your employees very happy and they stick around.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, we have great retention. In fact, I like to say among salaried people, I don't think we've ever lost anyone, although I'm sure somebody will pop up I mean, I've let people go, but I don't think anyone's ever quit Stickerman, although I'm sure somebody will pop up and say, you know, he's wrong. This is like when they say like Trump's wrong, like these are the types of errors he'll make where he'll be 99.9% right. And then like they'll find like the one exception to what he said and they'll be like, oh, he lied about this. So, you know, I've been around for 14 years and yeah, I think I created a low pressure environment in general for people. That's what I tried to do. And yeah, I don't think we've ever lost, you know, we've never lost a salary person. Manufacturing people, you know, some people like it and they don't like it and they change jobs. Younger people in general, you know, they might stay with a job, they might not. They kind of try different things out until they find what they like. And, you know, some people work in manufacturing for a period and they want to go to college and do something else. So in the factory, we have, you know, we don't have 100% retention. People will leave, but in salary, we have, I think, near 100% retention.
That's awesome. What, to end it, cause I know we only have an hour here, but, what advice would you give to anybody out there thinking about starting a business today?
You know, number one principle is just like move quickly. And like, if you do more things, you can make more mistakes. And so, you know, that's been the biggest thing I learned, just move quickly and just keep doing things and doing things and doing things. And then the other thing is be like really metrics driven, like don't get stressed out about minutiae. I mean, in the beginning you got to, but yeah, don't get stressed out about, you know, don't get stressed out about ownership, but yeah, nothing beats moving quickly. Nothing beats that. You know, and beyond, you know, nothing beats moving quickly.
get it out there. Get it fast. This was a fascinating conversation, Anthony. I really appreciate you coming on and, sticking your neck out there and, standing up for sanity in a world that seems to be getting crazier and crazier. I think, individual actions like yours do add up over time. Like you mentioned, there's many other people that are standing up. That's what I think is most needed today, is more sane, successful, and confident individuals to step out and say, hey guys, this is getting a little crazy. We don't need to go in this direction. Because there's a lot of white pills out there. We have a lot of potential here as a country to do things that we're able to unify and not let political differences get in the way of civility at the end of the day.
For sure, for sure. No, it was great coming and talking to you. It was a lot of fun and, you know, very interesting for me as well, especially to hear from, you know, I haven't talked to anyone who's ever said, oh, by the way, I know Jack Dorsey. So, you know, I suspect you might be right. Maybe I like him. You know, I like most people once. That's the other crazy thing about this whole political thing. It's like people get mad at each other on the internet, but most people, when they meet each other in a bar, they like each other. You know, I rarely run into people I don't like, and people I think that meet me rarely, you know, dislike me. So, well, I suspect I'd like him, although, you know, I don't like what happened with Twitter. But
I don't think, I'll say, I don't think he does either. And I did. And to be clear, I didn't do not either. I did not like what happened. I think we can talk about it offline. Thank you for joining us.
Definitely. I think that's the whole point of this whole thing. I think everybody liked each other a lot more than they realize. And like, hopefully people that heard me make the statement I make realize, you know, it's like, yeah, the hate's crazy in either direction. Like once people get to know each other, like the hate goes right really quickly. And, you know, yeah. And so, yeah, hopefully this was an interesting conversation. And I certainly enjoyed it. And I learned a lot too.
It's like those videos of the two dogs barking at each other with the fence. And then the fence comes by and they're like, oh, we're not barking at each other. It's like once you, once you remove that digital fence and you're forced to talk in person, things, it's like, hey, we're people. Yeah. All right. Thank you. That's all we got today. Peace and love, freaks.